Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Roman Roberts. Roman is a former Army interrogator who's here to talk about his rocky transition after leaving the military and all the things that went on with that. Roman also hosts the Real Talk with Roman podcast and is a business consultant who leverages his military background to drive success for his clients. So welcome to the show, Roman. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, man, Scott, I'm super happy to be here. Thank you for having me on. As far as my background, you know, I put it in my LinkedIn and I kind of say it to everyone I talk to and when I'm on podcasts, it really starts in foster care, right? I grew up in abusive foster homes. Well, I like to say less than ideal because not every foster home that I was in was bad, but they weren't all great either. And so that kind of set an environment for me where I was not really fitting in, constantly trying to be a chameleon, trying to find what my place was in the world, but really just being who people wanted me to be so I wouldn't get hurt, so I wouldn't get abandoned, whatever else, right? And that eventually pushed me towards the military as quickly as I could get out of where I was and joined the military, scored really well on my ASVAB. And they basically said, hey, what are you interested in being? And I said, you know, I don't know. I just want something that's going to get me connected. And, you know, I'd only watched like military movies. So I'm like, you know, the guys who are out there on the front lines fighting. And the recruiter basically, you know, kind of said, hey, well, I have this job. It's called a human intelligence collector. And, you know, you have all the aptitudes for it. You scored high in it. And we're offering a $10,000 bonus. So 18 years old sounded super great to me. Right. And so I took off on it. And really and truly, it was a great decision. You know, I call it divine intervention because it really was the perfect choice for me. I had chameleoned into different environments. So that had helped me when I became an interrogator. And it was just really great. The only downside to it was doing all of that, manipulating those people, being involved in those interrogations time over time, working with special operations, deploying time over time. It really took a toll on me. And when you mix that trauma with the trauma from being a foster kid, so really and truly, I just packed trauma on top of trauma for like a 20-year period, right? And so that's really rough when you do something like that. And then it proceeded to get worse in the subsequent end years. And then I jumped into transitioning out. And that's when it all really came to a head. And I really had the opportunity to deal with it because my identity was always wrapped up in being a soldier, right? I was Roman the interrogator. Then I was Roman the really good interrogator, right? And so that just became who I was. And I never really said who is Roman because I never really had to. And then I got out and all of that kind of collapsed in on itself. So it was like, well, who is Roman? so then the path began and that's where transition got a little rocky for me and went through a lot of ups and downs from alcohol to pills to, you know, stepping out of my marriage to almost committing suicide. Very, very rough path inside of there. Eventually got it together by actually asking that question, going to therapy and saying, who is Roman? And doing the work. You know, actually really and truly interrogating myself, communicating with myself and saying, okay, this is who Roman is. And Roman's a person who likes to help people, who is also a really good communicator and likes, you know, the analytics side of the world. So how can I mix all of those together? And that's where business and business consulting kind of came into play. So that's the high, or I guess the mid-level view, because I threw a little bit of detail into that.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. And I think Your story is actually probably a somewhat common story with people in the military who, you know, they get out of high school, they join the military, and their whole identity for, you know, a good portion of their life is as a soldier or as a Marine or, you know, whatever the branch that they join. But, you know, that's their identity is they are in the military. And, you know, when you're in high school, you don't really have an identity, you know, you don't know who you are. You know, I mean, you might be, you know, the star quarterback or something like that, and that might be your identity, but that's something that lasts for a couple of years, and then you're not that anymore, you know, unless you're stellar and you go off to college and you play there, you know. Yeah. Whatever, but that's probably few and far between.
Exactly.
So I think your story there is probably pretty common, where people you know, they start off and they're like, hey, I'm a soldier, and that's my identity, and then they stay in 20 years or, you know, whatever the time period is that they stay in. And actually, if they stay in for 20 years, they've been a soldier longer than they've been anything else. Yeah. In their life, you know?
Yeah. You know, I actually have a really big, and so I'm not against, I'm a veteran, right? Like, I get it. I'm not against these veteran outreach communities or these veteran programs or any of that. The statements I'm about to say is going to sound kind of controversial, but just because you're a veteran doesn't mean that that's your only identity. That's a Absolutely piece of right. who you are. And I think too often when we transition out, we say, I'm a veteran, right? And so then that just becomes who we are, right? Every introduction is, you know, I'm a veteran, right? We lead off in it. It's our headline on LinkedIn. It's all these different things. And that's great. I'm not saying forget about your time in the military. I'm simply saying it's a chapter of your book. So we kind of have to change the narrative to stop being so set on I'm a veteran. Right. That's a piece of who you are. Who are you really, right? And you're a compilation of multiple pieces, right? I'm a veteran. I'm a foster child. I'm a podcaster. I'm a business consultant. I'm a former interrogator. I'm working on my book. So one day I'm going to be an author, right?
Like, right.
All of these are pieces of who I am. It's not everything, but all of those link to a core thing. And that core thing is service. I am a person who likes to serve other people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to your point, it's a chapter in your book, in your story, you know, of your life, you know, if you want to call it that. And your book is still being written, you know, that book of life is still being written. There's new chapters being written every day. You know, you're going to, you know, maybe have children, get married, you know, all these things are going to happen. And so now your identity is as a husband or a wife or as a father or mother, you know, whatever the case may be. The new chapters keep get written every single day in mm-hmm. this book. And you know, so you can't end the book with I'm a veteran and period, end of story, close the book. Like, there's a whole lot more, you know, under the surface there. So let's go back to your transition out of the military. You mentioned that it was kind of a rocky transition. So you were in for how many years?
So I did 8 years. I did 6 years active duty, and then I did 2 years as a contractor working with MARSOC and Helmand. So essentially I said, you know what, I'm going to transition out of the military. I'm not going to be in the military anymore. I then immediately jumped on a plane and did the exact same thing I was doing in the military.
Right.
And so when I came back after doing that for 2 years, nobody pictured me as a soldier, right? Like, I was supposed to have transitioned out already. I was supposed to know how to be a civilian, but I had spent 2 years doing the exact same thing and really and truly doing it in a hostile environment, right? So
for sure,
I was even less than really a transition veteran, because for 2 years I hadn't even been in America,
right?
So it was really rough in the sense that I didn't pay attention during ACAP. I truthfully, and I said this on another podcast the other day, and I don't mean it to bash the military, but ACAP was a joke. I mean, I literally skipped like 2 days of it to go drink, right? Like, I mean, like it was a joke. And that was, and everyone was like, build a LinkedIn profile, right? So you'd build one and it was complete garbage. And knowing what I know now, like, I could have capitalized so big on the LinkedIn market and things like that. But the point being is, like, none of it was really actionable, right? So I was in there, a guy who'd done 6 years was still like in the drinking, like, I can do whatever I want mentality. And I was sitting right beside people who'd been doing it for 20 years or staff sergeants at like 10, 12 years who had their wife beside them helping them with this process or their husband with them helping them with this process. And here I am like this kid that's kind of like, yeah, whatever, right? And then I find out 2 days into my transition that my buddies hooked me up with a chance to go overseas as a contractor doing the exact same thing for even more money. So now I've completely toned out. Like I have no clue what's happening in this whole event. And it really, and I think it's a disservice that happened too commonly in my time frame of getting out, right? Because I got out in 2013 and that was really big then. I think it's kind of shifted a little bit now. That's not as true, but I think it still happens, right? It still is a common tale. It's just not as common. And so I think for me, the biggest issue that I have with transition is that we haven't really taught veterans how to take it seriously. Now on the back end, there are people like myself, you know, Rob Renz, Rich Cardona, you, like there's all kinds of people who are now becoming vocal about what their transition was like and telling their story and stepping into their sectors, right? Me in business consulting and finance and, you know, people in media, social media, people in marketing, people in all these different avenues who are starting to say, yeah, look, these are the mistakes I made. These are the things I did, which was, again, wasn't a common thing. So like, I love that the transition has now become us outside saying, Hey, kid, come over here. I have a van with candy, right? Yeah. And we get there. We shine flashy things at them to get them to come over here and listen to what we have to say, because really and truly, nobody was saying it to us when we got out. And
right.
I think it gives me hope, but it also kind of hurts, right? That's what the transition was like. But yeah, it was awful for me. I mean, I went to go apply to jobs in banks, and I had no clue how to tell my experience, right? Like, trained communicator, done thousands of interrogations all over the world, and couldn't even translate my skills to a civilian employer. Like, had no clue how to do it. So I'm over here telling like a bank manager, yeah, you know, I've been to breaching and clearing courses. I know what it's like to do CQB. Like, this dude's like, I have no clue. Is that a finance term? Like, what is that? You know? And so when we don't teach those things, it really hurts. And the ACAP program wasn't teaching that at the time. No. And I don't know what it's like now, right? I've been separated from that piece of it too long. Now, I do know that people coming out still do have very generic cookie cutter resumes that are tailored towards government jobs that, you know, probably wouldn't pass the hiring systems for, you know, most companies or organizations. But you know, at least there's someone on the back end to kind of pick them up and say, hey, this is bad. Because when I got out, nobody was there. And I don't know that I necessarily would have listened, because 2 years straight in Afghanistan really took a toll on me. So I honestly spent a year just drinking and playing PlayStation in my house and being, you know, like traveling places and just being ridiculous.
Right.
Which, you know, I guess people are like, oh, well, you know, you were entitled to it. You spent 2 years out there. But it wasn't good for me. It just perpetuated the cycle. And, you know, I went from drinking a lot to hardly drinking. At that time, the bro vet was a really big thing, right? The drinking and like, oh, yeah, you know, be a vet, like rock the t-shirts and do this and, you know, don't let somebody step on you and say, fuck them, you know, and stuff like that was kind of the culture. And it was kind of a disservice to the entire community, right? In my personal opinion. And that's not to say that it doesn't have a place. I'm not bashing every person who does that. I'm not bashing the clothing companies, but those were marketing strategies. And every veteran getting out didn't realize that was a marketing strategy, right?
As opposed to the way to live, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, all of these transition programs that are out there, a lot of times, from what I've heard and you know what I've experienced, it's like drinking from a fire hose. It's like you're not going to absorb all of this information. They can hand you all these packets of information with resources that are available for careers or education or you know, whatever other benefits you might have available to you. But how much of that are you really absorbing and really understanding, especially when there's so many conditions on some of these things. Like, you know, if you served for this long and, you know, then you get access to these different benefits. And if you served, deployed or whatever, you know, different benefits are available to you and under certain circumstances or whatever. And it's just so hard to follow all of that stuff. And I know for me, when I was going through some of that, that debriefing type stuff, I was just like, I don't care. Let me out. I'll figure this out at when I need to figure it out. But there's so much stuff I know I missed, that was available to me, and I'm only finding out about some of the stuff now. And it's, you know, almost 10 years later, you know, that I'm actually like understanding, like, oh, geez, there's these programs available, or I could have been, you know, collecting some disability benefits for all these years and didn't even realize it, but because I just didn't pay all that close attention to it.
And you know what, that's a huge one that you just said, the disability thing. So for me, I'm actually just now in the process of filing, right? So I started a year ago, and they had tons of issues. They actually still are having issues finding my medical paperwork, right? And COVID hasn't helped that at all.
No,
but you know, point being is nobody said, hey, you should really take getting your benefits serious. To me, I thought I shouldn't take benefits because that's money that's allocated for people who have lost their legs, who have all these major injuries, right? But what I didn't realize is by filing it now, like A, you get a rating of some sort. B, that helps you as you're trying to do other things, job preference, housing, things like that. But it also gives you the ability to go to the VA whenever you need help. And especially as you get older, right? It gives a way for your family to have a means to take care of you, because some of those injuries can add up over years, right? But if it's not taken care of up front, the process is a lot harder than what it would be had I just done it, you know, within the first 90, 180 days after I got out. So I think really and truly one of the biggest things I wish that I had known and somebody had actually... And when I say somebody, not the person in the military or the person who comes up and speaks for 5 minutes and says, this is what it is, and hands you a packet.
Yep.
I mean, I wish a real veteran had come into the door, maybe with some tattoos on them, you know, someone that I could relate to and say, oh, I understand this person, right? And go, hey, don't be an idiot. This is going to help you. Go get it. And this is how you do it. And oh, by the way, this is even easier. And now all the veterans that I know, myself included, right? Like if they were in those type of conversations, they'd have given their number, their LinkedIn profile, their email, all that information right there. And I guarantee you they can work faster than the VA system or whoever you're trying to go. Like they can help you jump through 90% of the hurdles that you think you have to go through on your own. So I wish that the system would have allowed more time for that. And still to this day, right, wish it would, as opposed to we're trying to catch all the people on the back end, right? Because it's like fishing with a hole in your net. You're going to get some, but you're not, like, there's still people who aren't going to get the help they need.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to go back to one of the things that you said before. And I like that you made this point, that you were thinking that this disability benefits are there for the, you know, the people who lost their legs or, you know, an arm or something like that. And while that's true, that is certainly what it's there for. You know, if let's say you have PTSD, right? And there you can get disability rating for PTSD. But you know, sometimes when you are struggling with these mental health issues, it's hard to keep your focus, to keep hold down a job and things like that. And this kind of disability rating that you could end up with bridges that gap for you so that you can focus on getting better as opposed to having to worry about getting better and how do I keep the lights on? How do I keep a roof over my head and not wind up being one of these homeless veterans who's out on the streets because I can't hold a job, you know? So it's not a selfish thing to take these disability benefits. I think it actually would be probably more selfish if you refused it and needed it and wound up becoming one of the 22 a day, or wound up on the street needing even more help to, you know, get yourself cleaned up and all this other stuff. So, you know, I definitely think, you know, if anyone's out there who's on the fence, like, oh, gee, I don't know, I probably shouldn't do it because someone else needs it more than me. Well, you might need it too. So, you know, you might actually be in that situation.
And you don't even know. You think like, oh, it's normal. The ringing in my ears is normal, right? The back pain is normal. The knee pain is normal, right? Like, oh, those are all, breaking my nose is normal. That doesn't have a major significant impact in my life long-term. My nose is set. It's still straight. Right. Dude, it has an impact, you know, like you've created trauma in the body, and trauma stays. Like,
it does.
From somebody who's gone through it as a child and as an adult, like, yeah, trauma stays in the body, and you actually have to work at getting it out, right? Whether you go through holistic medicine, therapy, you know, pharmaceutical meds, whatever it is, right? I'm not so much for pharmaceutical, but point being, whatever that method is it costs money. It costs time, right? Mm-hmm. And not every job is going to be okay with you taking that time all the time, right?
Right.
Well, they may say that that's allowed. You know, there's just certain instances where you can't. And the military mindset is, I'm going to push through, and I'm going to make it happen, and I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to do all this stuff. And while that's great and that will help you in your future career path, whatever it is, you got to realize that the reason these services are in place is because the need has been established, right? Like, we know the veterans have a need for this stuff.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you need this stuff, go out, get it. And take advantage of it. Like you said, the needs been established there. Like, we know that veterans need this assistance. And so, you know, use it and go with that. So going back to your transition, you know, it was a rocky transition. You know, you kind of jumped off the deep end there, where, you know, you went from, you know, your time in the military, you were contracting, but essentially doing the same job. And then all of a sudden one day you flip the switch, and now you're just Joe civilian, not in a hostile environment. You're in the United States, in a relatively safe place, you know, presumably. How did you ultimately overcome all this stuff? So, you know, you spent a year, you know, on the couch playing PlayStation and drinking and all this other stuff. How'd you end up getting over all of this stuff?
Yeah. So for me, honestly, the year that I came back and didn't do anything, that was really bad for me, right? Because it set kind of a bar for me, right? So I kind of stopped working out as much as I should. So that kind of, you know, affected me negatively. I was drinking a lot more, not very healthy for people who haven't dealt with their trauma, right? I'm not saying you can't drink. I still drink. I don't drink nearly the way that I used to.
Right.
But truthfully, we should be telling people, and I was actually talking about this on a podcast with Rocco the other day, like, we should be telling people how to drink responsibly, and not this call your buddy, do you have a number in the phone, can you get the staff duty, can you, you know, call your veteran buddy. No, like, are you in the right mental headspace to drink five beers? And if the answer is no, then don't drink five beers. Like, it's that simple, right? And that wasn't what I was doing. So essentially, I mean, I was waking up in the morning and, you know, pouring myself a bourbon and coffee when I was, you know, spending that year. So then now I'm having to transition out of that as I'm going back into the workplace. So that wasn't like just one day I stopped drinking bourbons in the morning, right? Like, it took time. And then there were still phasing cycles, and I was working in kind of an environment where drinking was a big thing. There was still a big drinking culture. And for my first job. And so all of that put together, you know, just kind of kept pushing those traumas, and it led me to a place where, you know, I stepped out of my marriage. I, you know, almost committed suicide. And when I got to those kind of lines, I went to therapy. I went and talked to somebody, and it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, but it was really one of the things that had to be done.
Yep.
And the thing that I think people do is, and veterans especially, they go to therapy and they know the answers to get out of the therapist office, right? Like, I know what to say to get a therapist to back off and sign my papers, right? Like, everyone's done it. Not, I say everyone, that's a broad generalization, but a lot of people have done that to continue doing what they love to do, right?
Right.
And especially in the veteran multiple deployments world. So for me, I had to really sit down and say, okay, therapist, I'm going to tell you everything, right? And we took it all the way back to me being in foster care. And they were like, dude, you should not. They were like, nobody flagged any of this. And I was like, yeah, I didn't tell anybody about any of this. Right. And they're like, yeah, you're supposed to. This is really bad for you, right? Like, you can't keep, the same way as you can't like walk on a broken leg, you can't go through life without addressing the traumas, right? Whether it, and the other thing too is we got to stop this whole veteran shaming bullshit. Like, there's no other way to say it. Like, you didn't deploy with special operations, you're not a badass. You didn't do this, you're not a badass. You didn't,
right.
I know cooks who have been in like some of the worst situations you could possibly imagine, right? And nobody would think, oh, well, that cook is the person who would have been in that. But the point is that trauma is trauma, and it's not mine to rate. It's not anyone else's to rate. It's for you and, you know, the people that you're working through it with to work through. So yeah. It's okay. I, you know, your trauma may be from, you know, being on a deployment and hearing about a friend dying. You may not have actually been there, but that's okay. Like, that's still a trauma, and that's still something you have to work through. There's no scale for it, right? It's just, we're humans and we go through shit and we have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's what essentially I did. You know, I started talking to people, I started going to therapy, I started journaling, I got back to religion. And one of the big things for me was I got away from the pharmaceutical pills. So I was taking all the pills that they give you, right? The sleeping pills, the anxiety pills, all of that. It was not helping me. I think if anything, it was really making it worse for me. And I think now a lot of veterans are starting to notice that, and they're starting to build kind of programs to kind of help with that and things like that. I moved kind of the extreme route. You know, we're more organic, natural foods, holistic, in the sense of, you know, I don't really like down to cold medicine unless I like really, really have to. I think the other day I took ibuprofen for the first time in like 5 years. Right. So right. So literally like none of that, you know, I do natural treatments, teas, essential oils, things like that. And that works for me. Like, I've got more mobility in my leg. I do yoga, meditation. I've got more mobility in my leg. And so I had knee injuries, got more mobility than I ever had, running on par times to what I was running at my peak in the military. Right. And I'm now multiple traumas, years older, right. Still able to run at that rate. And it's one of those things that, you know, the pills, the things that they're doing are kind of band-aids, in my opinion. And the therapy, right, the really unpacking those issues is the key to it. The journaling was a big key for me, right? And it's still a big key. Journaling is a big part of my life. Like, literally, I'm looking at my desk right now, and I've got 6 different journals that I'm actually going to start a journaling series on. And I'm going to talk about all the different journals that I've used over time that have helped me, and then do like video walkthroughs and kind of show the pages and things to kind of show those to veterans and just people in general to say, hey, these are journals that work for me. You should try them out in your life. And, you know, no promotion by the organization. It's just me saying, hey, this is what worked.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a great thing to do, to share with other people. Because some people, I know myself, I started journaling recently, and you know, I almost kind of felt lost when I first started. I was like, you know, what do I even write about? You know, what do I do? How do I do this? Like, and it's just like writing down your thoughts and stuff. It's not,
there's no wrong way to do it.
No,
but if you don't have like, so for me, one of the first journals I started with was the Mind Journal. Uh-huh. And that journal has a lot of prompts. So it's a half and half book. The front half has prompts, the back half doesn't. And so essentially you kind of training wheels it, right? So they walk you through it, and then you kind of get the back half to do it. Got and it. Then you can kind of say, do I want to move to like a free journaling, free writing, or do I want to go back to something with a little more structure, right? Because there are tons of structured journals that give you the prompts, that give you the gratitude and things like that. And I think for me, that was huge, right? Because it allowed me to get my thoughts down. And I think for a lot of veterans, you know, I can't tell everybody's story. And just because journaling worked for me, it may not work for you.
Right.
But it definitely allowed me to clear my head. And I think the biggest thing was, I just didn't clear my head. I mean, we just have this go, go, go mentality, and we just never took the time to clear our heads. You know, we did what we had to do like we did quick release almost, right? Like we did a split second decompress and then we turned the pressure right back on, right?
For
like,
sure, yeah.
You've got to do some long-term decompression, right? Like for a lot of us, we've been through a lot of traumas of some sort. And so that's really what it was for me. It was just slowly but surely unpacking. And even now, I mean, I don't have near the moments I used to. I mean, I snapped on my mother-in-law when the first like Memorial Day came around. And looking back on it, I'm like, why did I do that? That's so horrible. Yeah. But I wasn't in a good place. I mean, like, right. And it was over something stupid. Like a song was playing and she was talking and I was like, shut up. Right. Like that. And like, I'm like, what in the world, you know, like, but it was because I hadn't unpacked any of this. Right. And,
right.
And I think that's kind of the thing, whether it's through journaling, you know, I've noticed a lot of veterans are starting podcasts and, you know, talking and doing, you know, there's a Project Refit that's doing like, you know, letting people jump on for radio check-ins and, you know, they have conversations with other veterans, right? So whether it's, you know, you talking to yourself or you talking to someone else, I think you have to have the conversation of some sort. And I'm big on communication, so I'm a little bit biased, obviously,
right.
But there has to be some form of communication because that's the only way you're really going to get it out there. And unless it's out there, it's bottled inside of you.
Yeah. And I do want to get back to that point, but one thing that you briefly touched on before, and I want to just make sure I reiterate something here. For anyone who is listening, who's still in the military, who is, you know, either deployed or, you know, stateside, wherever you happen to be, any medical issues that you have, mental health issues, any of those issues that you have, make sure those things get documented in your medical record. It makes it so much easier, going back to our conversation about the disability and things like that, when you really realize that you do need to file for a disability claim. If that stuff's not in your medical record, it becomes exponentially harder to file for that disability claim. And so make sure you document all of the little things that might come up, because you never know when one of those little things builds up and builds up and builds up. You know, your knees start hurting, your back starts hurting, things like that. You know, document all of that stuff. Make sure that it all gets documented, even though it might be a pain in the ass to go get it all documented. Make sure it gets done. You know, I can't stress that enough.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, the big part to that is, you know, don't worry about the stigma, right? Like, get it done. Like, right. I know, like, I'm not saying, you know, to milk it and nurse it and do what isn't there, but if it's there, go get it, because otherwise, yeah, like to that point, you're trying to fight almost a losing battle. Right. And not to say that the system is out to say you don't have it, but the system is there to make sure that the money is allocated properly to
people. Right. And one of the things that they have to do is verify that the injury was service connected. Mm-hmm. And if there's nothing about it in your service record, it's going to be harder to link that to your military service. You know, so just do it, take care of it, make sure it gets in there. And then you don't have to worry about it quite so much later on. But yeah, so that was a little sidetrack, but I wanted to get back to, you know, talking about having these conversations, you know, the importance of having these open and honest conversations with other people. And I imagine, this type of thing would start with being honest with yourself, you know, looking in on yourself, like you were saying, you know, when you went to therapy, you could have very easily, just said all the things that checked all the boxes on the therapist's checklist and got you out of there. I know when I got back from deployment, you know, they had the I don't even know what they called it, but we had to meet with a mental health, you know, professional, and I answered all the questions just to get out of there as quickly as possible, you know, pretty much. And that was probably the wrong thing to do, looking back on it. You know, I had experienced quite a bit of stuff that probably needed to be dealt with, but I just wanted to get out of there. And again, there was that stigma. I definitely was not being honest with myself or with the people that I was speaking with. But what about these conversations? What is the importance of these types of conversations that we're talking about here?
Yeah. So, I mean, the importance is that you can't really heal unless you have them, right? Like, first and foremost, like, I mean, my marriage was falling apart, you know, now I have a 3-year-old son, right? If I had not addressed this stuff before having my son, life for him could be very different, you know, and that actually kind of hurts me to say out loud. This is actually kind of the first time I've said that statement out loud. Right. And now that I reflect on it, I'm like, dang, that's actually pretty harsh. But that's kind of the truth of it, right? And that's the hardest part. Having the conversation with yourself is the hardest part. And getting yourself to be open and honest with all of the people, especially when you know how to say the answers to get out of it. So it's the first step, because like you hear me now, right? You hear me having this conversation. And if you go back and you look on my LinkedIn, or you go check out Real Talk with Roman, or you know, wherever I'm at on any social, you're going to see me like telling the story and being open and authentic about it. And you're going to hear a very similar track on any of these. But the reason that that's the case is because I had the conversation with myself. I had the conversation with my therapist. Like I went from being a person who had to pour a drink to remember my buddies to being able to sit outside and tell people who've never met them and are never going to get to meet them what they're like, but I didn't need alcohol to do it because I was in a good enough place to where I could just have the conversation.
Right.
And that's really what it's about. Like, do you want to be that person that's always depending on some kind of a crutch, right? Whether it's CBD, alcohol, you know, just, you know, getting out and shooting guns. And I'm not saying any of that stuff isn't bad in moderation. Like, obviously you can do anything in moderation. But the point being is we use them as crutches too often. And until you get comfortable with yourself and you get comfortable with the things that have happened to you and the things you've been exposed to, then you're going to use everything around you as a crutch and you're going to take it out on people. And people are going to start knowing. I mean, when I first came home, my wife would always introduce me with the preface of, I just came back from a deployment, right? And saying like, basically saying, he's probably going to say something out of line. And,
right,
you know, don't hold him accountable, or he's going to just be mean and walk away, or he's going to just sit in the corner and drink, right? Like that's, and it sounds so horrible. And it sounds like the stereotype you see on TV, but truthfully, like that's what I was doing. And until I had that conversation with myself, I wasn't able to see how actually like, and this is going to sound harsh, but how disgusting it was, right? To be that kind of person, to be the person who could go to a restaurant, you know, like a Benihana's, and I'm there with my wife and a bunch of other people, and I've been drinking all day. And then I, you know, make an ass of myself at the table because I just kept drinking the whole time I was there. Right. Like, yeah. I mean, it, there's no reason for it. It doesn't make any sense. It perpetuates the bad stereotypes that veterans have. It's not an accurate representation of who we are. It's just an accurate representation of us not dealing with the traumas that have come our way. And so, yeah, that's my biggest thing. Like, and you can't actually show up your best for your work, for your family, for yourself, right, until you actually have these conversations. And they're going to be hard and they're going to suck. I mean, the first time I talked about all this stuff, it was hard, right? The very first podcast I was on, I was kind of like fumbling my way through it. Like now I'm just like, whatever, bring it on. I'm like, yeah, I got drunk at a Benihana's and made an ass of myself. Like it happened. Like I can't change that, but I can definitely say, hey, don't be like me. And hopefully one veteran hears it, or one person about to transition out and goes, yeah, you know what? I shouldn't. Or they rethink that whole idea of, I don't rate going to the VA. No, you all rate. It's called veterans, right? It's for right. Veterans, right? Like you're all veterans. You all rate it. So don't be ashamed to go do what you need to do, because you already gave everything you had to be a part of this, right? To help the country in a time of need, right? Whether you joined in a time of war or not, you joined and quite possibly could have died, right? Like it's in the back of everyone's mind who's ever been in the military.
Right.
The point being is now you're out of it and you have to reintegrate into society. You have to. And for millennia, for as long as soldiers have been fighting in wars, wars have ended and they've had to reintegrate into society. And it's always been a challenge. And we haven't gotten it right throughout history, right? We're still working to get it right. And that's okay. But if you don't figure it out for yourself and you don't start having these conversations, then you're not going to be able to show up to help the next veteran through and to make this incrementally better. And I think the one thing every veteran has in common is we want to serve our community. We want to help our community. We want to help our brothers and sisters in arms. So kind of that, put your own mask on before putting on someone else's, deal with your stuff. And then we can start making the overall veteran affairs system better. We can start making the overall veteran community better, right? Like you can start becoming a part of outreach programs like Veteran or Project Refit or Healing Heroes or any of these places and actually do it. You can start the next podcast that veterans listen to, but until you deal with it, you're not going to be able to do it.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be so much harder for you to do anything and function in society if you're not dealing with the issues that you have going on. If you have PTSD or you have other issues going on, you're not going to be able to be on top of your game. As much as you might think that you can just muscle through it and just drive right through and get everything done on your own, you're not going to be as effective.
And that's the other bad part, right? Because we're set up to win. Like military veterans are set up to win. 9 out of 10 of us, right? We are set up to figure out how to adapt to the scenario and overcome it, right? So you can be physically or mentally out of sorts and still show up and outperform everybody inside of your job. I know it because I did it, right? I was literally a mess, but every person who worked with me was like, Roman knows everything about this. Roman is a guy promoted above peers, right? And it's a common military tale. But eventually you get to a place where all of that is not going to sustain you, right? Because it gets overwhelming. Like it builds so much until it has to explode. And if you're not taking the time now to start releasing it, and that's why I journal now, right? That's why I continue with it, because it's a continuous relief valve for me. I don't always write 20 pages inside of a journal. Sometimes it may be 3 sentences, but that 3 sentences is a release, and it's getting some of that off of me and getting some of that out of me. It's making it where when I deal with the next thing and every podcast that I do, this is another form of journaling for me, right? Like this is therapeutic in its own way. And right. It's just finding what that is for you and really pushing through and driving on and, clearing the air about what's going on inside of yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now, looking at your current career, the things that you're doing now, how are you using the skills and the whatever you've gained through your military career? How are you using all that stuff now in your current career?
Yeah, so it's tied into everything I do. So I do business consulting where I help organizations, increase their profitability and productivity through, their written procedures, the business processes that they have. So the way that they operate, how they operate, and not all of it is the cookie cutter, like, oh, be a better leader, right? Like not just that military end of it, right? Because there's a lot of military consultants who are doing that, right? Saying how to build teams, you have like the team of teams and like, even Jocko Willink and Echelon Front, things like that. Like those are not bad programs, but that's not the main core of what I'm doing. I have a lot of business certifications, Six Sigma, PMP, Agile, auditing, all these different things. And so what I try to do is incorporate both pieces of it. Right. So I was an interrogator in the military, communicated in some of the hardest situations possible. And when you look at business, all businesses are communication, and 90% of their issues are due to a communication breakdown, whether it's inside of their policies and procedures, the way that their teammates communicate with each other, the way that leadership communicates down, the way that the mission statement is communicated to the public, right? All of those things. And so what I do is I basically integrate in, look at what they're doing and say, hey, your written procedures could better align with what your mission is by doing this. And then keeping it in accordance with, ISO 9001 or AS9100 or SAMC or ANSI or whatever standard that they have in place that they want to be relevant to. So I mix that military knowledge of SOPs and things like that into how, you know, current civilian regulations are, and how through me going through multiple forms of interrogation, both written and verbal communicated, how those statements can be better put together. So I rewrite policies. I help organizations build out, you know, their strategies, having through the lens of both tactical and business, right? I've worked with nonprofits. I've worked with Fortune 500 companies. I've worked inside of global organizations. I've done it all. And so I'm able to take all of those different pieces and turn it into a comprehensive package, a comprehensive way to say, this is what the problem is, and this is how we solve it. You know, and it's not just be better leaders, right? While that can be a piece of it, and that's an important part, that's definitely not the entire scope of it. And I'm not going to say, okay, let's all get the paintball guns out and let's go run like some tactical drills, right? Like that has its place. And sure, you can pay somebody to do that. That's not what I do. I sit down and I, you know, use the interrogation skills that I've gone through and that I've picked up over the years to find out the problems in your business. Then I use the business skills like the Lean Six Sigma, black belts, and all of those different things, those certifications that I've acquired over the years, to then link those problems to a military and civilian-based solution that incorporates the best of both worlds. And then I teach those strategies to the actual organization so that they can do it. I try to focus with small and mid-sized businesses because they don't have the same budgets to allocate to turn every one of their employees into a black belt or things like that. And truthfully, if I gave every single one of them the black belt curriculum, they still wouldn't execute inside of their organization the way they need to, because the way that Fortune 500s and large companies implement all these strategies is completely different than the way that a nonprofit focused on foster care is going to look at them, right? And so instead of overwhelming them with the tools that they don't need, I basically customize it to what they do.
That's awesome. And I think it's great that you found something, and you alluded to this earlier in the episode, but you found something that you're able to kind of marry all the skills that you have and all the background that you've gone through, through your military career, throughout your whole life, really. And you've turned it into something that you can actually do, to help other people. Like you were saying, that's your gig, is you like to help people. So, and it seems like that's exactly what you're doing. Helping out these businesses and helping out, people along the way. So, is there anything else that you wanted to, talk about in terms of, advice for veterans or people who might still be in the military, maybe in the last 6 months of their career, transitioning out, soon, anything else, any other types of advice that you might have, for those types of people?
Yeah. Get on LinkedIn and actually use LinkedIn, right? Like, not the way that ACAP's going to tell you how to do it or any of that stuff. I'm talking, get on there and start adding people. And, you know, right off the top of my head, Rich Cardona, Rob Renz, myself, you can add me. I gladly, until I hit the cap, I'll keep adding people. But, James Corbin, like all these different people, like I literally have like tons of names running in my head. They're all rambling together, but essentially find those veterans who have been out for a while and who have been figuring it out and start seeing, because the one thing you'll also notice is a lot of the veterans on LinkedIn are posting about how to do LinkedIn right. And LinkedIn is a very strong tool, and it's not a strong tool in the way that the military set it up, right? Write your resume, put it out there, and just copy and paste it. Your resume and LinkedIn are two totally separate things. So LinkedIn is how everyone translates the resume into you as an individual. They're seeing you every day showing up on the platform, right? And I encourage everyone to show up every day on the platform, even if it's just a post one thing or to reply to a couple of people, right? That's still content. But actually get on LinkedIn and utilize it. You actually get LinkedIn Premium for free as a veteran when you get out. There's a program that you can go through where you basically get a free year subscription to LinkedIn, which means that you will have premium access. So you can literally message anybody on the platform. Like, nobody's off limits. You don't have to be connected with them or anything. So you can start reaching out to people to learn all the tips and all the tricks and all the things you need to. People are actually really friendly on LinkedIn. That sounds so cheesy, but they really are. It's one of the few social platforms where people do connect and build the relationships offline, right? It's not Instagram where people are just trying to build a profile and get to influencer status. Like, Well, let me say there are people who do that, right? But predominantly, that's not the way that the platform's set up, and that's not the way that it works. And so actually use LinkedIn. If you're six years from getting out of the military, like, you just literally today, if you're listening to this and you don't have a LinkedIn, or all you've done is you've put your name and you got like 25 connections, get on there and start really using the platform, playing with it and putting it. Cause I know everyone listening on here scrolls through some form of social media for at least an hour a day, right? Like nine out of 10 people. So Switch that hour of Facebook over to an hour of LinkedIn, because you're going to start seeing the veteran resources. They're all going to start popping up, right? And because LinkedIn will automatically figure based on your job experience where you should be connected to, right? So they're going to start recommending other veterans to you. They're going to start recommending communities to you, right? The veterans of Afghan wars, the veterans of Iraq wars, the aviation flight group, right? Or like whatever it is, all those groups exist. Like there's, mm-hmm. there's an interrogation group inside of LinkedIn, right? So find that group that fits for who you are and literally go in there and say, hey, I'm transitioning. And whether you say you're transitioning in 6 years or 6 days, like, people will start giving you resources. And it's one of those give platforms. And I love that. And I think that a lot of veterans don't think that they can post all of their military background on there, right? So they get kind of nervous in that sense, right? I'm not saying put classified, but definitely, like, you can still post on the platform and people will know who you are and understand what you're doing. Right. Or other people will go, wow, yeah, that's not what you put on here. Let's rephrase that, right? Here's what you're trying to say. And, you know, just play with the platform, learn it, and get connected with those people. I mean, I'm connected with veterans in all 50 states. And, you know, we weren't in at the same time. We didn't serve in the same things. And obviously my podcast helps, right? I get to connect with veterans in that way. But they all are doing crazy things on LinkedIn. I mean, one of the guys that I just had on my show, he actually just did a program that I didn't even know existed. And it's it basically provides suits to veterans when they transition, male and female. It gives them a suit so that they have one for their first interviews. So he's in North Carolina. He did an event, gave out tons of suits. Basically, him and that organization, he basically opened up his office and all day gave out suits.
Wow. Right?
Like that's the kind of stuff that's out there. Like, those are the kind of things, and you're not getting it from somebody who's in an ACAP classroom, you know, checking their block to run through it to get their paycheck. You're talking to veterans who are giving you the time on the platform because they actually have a passion for doing it.
Yeah. And you are the second person in as many episodes to mention that as your advice to people who are, you know, transitioning out to get on to LinkedIn. So two for two, I think that it's probably worth checking out, you know, for anyone who's out there who doesn't have their LinkedIn profile filled out, who doesn't have all their background on there. Obviously, like you said, don't put classified information on there, but, you know, definitely fill it out, use it to the maximum potential, take advantage of that free, LinkedIn premium. You know, if you're eligible for that, you know, definitely take advantage of that. But definitely great advice. I think, making those connections, and especially in this day and age with COVID, it's hard to network in person. So if you can do the online networking and use LinkedIn to get in touch with people and make those connections, you know, that you can make connections in the industry you want to get into, or whatever, just through even secondary or you know, your second and third connections. You might have somebody there who can introduce you to somebody who's in that industry and can help you get the foot in the door.
And they actually have really good jobs. So they have a job section, right, where they companies post, and they actually have a really good, you know, job section. A lot of big companies are on there. A lot of small companies are on there. And it's actually just really well set up. It navigates really easily in the app. So if you're looking for a job when you get out of the military, it's another thing as opposed to just going to USA Jobs or, you know, right. Indeed or Monster. Like, not saying those are bad, but, you know, it's definitely an all-in-one shop, and those are nice.
Absolutely. Well, Roman, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Where can people go to get in touch with you and find out more about your podcast and everything else that you do?
Yeah. So LinkedIn is obviously one. Roman Roberts, just look me up. And then anything, any social platforms, Real Talk with Roman, whether you search the hashtag or you do just a search, Real Talk with Roman, you will find me, except for Twitter, Real Talk with Rome. But still, same thing, right? If you type in Real Talk with Roman, I'll still show up because of the hashtag. Yeah. And then podcast, Real Talk with Roman. And then my consulting business is bluesphinxconsulting.com. You can definitely go check that out. There's also a link to my podcast there as well. Whether it's, you know, you want to shoot me a message for your organization or you want to shoot me a message just to connect, I am always up to talk to anybody about anything. I think you never know what a conversation can lead to. So you just got to have it and find out.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thank you for joining us and sharing your story, sharing everything about your background, your history. Really great information. So thank you again.
I appreciate it. My pleasure, man.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.